This is Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. By now, you've likely seen it more times than you can remember. That video of Durham, North Carolina protesters kicking a twisted Confederate statue they'd toppled only moments before. That reaction to the violence in Charlottesville has renewed calls to remove other painful reminders of America's past. In states across the nation, many local officials are weighing whether to get rid of their Confederate statues, monuments, and markers. Some have already been removed. In Charlottesville, statues of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson are now covered, no longer in view. Today on Town Square, we'll look at the function of tangible memories of America's slave past and, in our state, reminders of the annexation of a kingdom. Are we trying to revise history to make it less painful and more palatable? Or are we losing the physical remembrance of events not to be repeated? Those are some of the questions we'll take up with my guests and you today on Town Square. Joining me in our studio are Pulkea Nogelmeyer and DeSoto Brown. Professor Pulkea Nogelmeyer is the director of the Institute of Hawaiian Language Research and Translation at UH Manoa. He's also the executive director of Avaya Ulu Translation Training and Resource Development. DeSoto Brown is the historian at Bishop Museum in Honolulu. He's worked for 30 years in collections with the Archives Department. He's also written a variety of books and articles on historical Hawaiian subjects, including Hawaii Goes to War, an illustrated account of Hawaii during World War II. He co-wrote The Art of the Aloha Shirt on Hawaii's most famous contribution to the garment industry. And, of course, you're here, too. Our number is 941-3689 if you'd like to join us from Oahu. And if you're on the neighbor islands or listening to us on the live stream, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Pulkea and DeSoto, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, certainly.
And thank you for having me, Mahalo Ike Kono.
Always good to talk to you, as we have for many years. As you look at the situations as they've been evolving on the continent, how do you assess those reactions in light of what you know Hawaii has experienced?
You know, I am not following, like, day-to-day. I don't have a television, so I'm doing the reading about what's happening on the mainland.
And, reading is good.
And, you know, it's keeping me abreast without some of the drama that's happening on when you were talking about kicking the statue. And, you know, so I don't have that image in my head. But I definitely have. You do.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
And but I'm still really rather mixed about, because locally, I think history, I'm more involved in Hawaiian history. And I have a lovely general run of American history that I can rely on, and it's there. So if that statue's there or not, I pretty much, it's not going to change my understanding of American history. But locally, I think there's almost a different application, or maybe it's just because I'm more specifically engaged. But I think history here, a lot of it has been fuzzy, and it's not generally known, so that I'm real hesitant to take away any markers, whether they're positive or negative. I think they should be used to illuminate history, because I don't think we give enough attention to history. The mention of the McKinley statue, and, you know, he signed a resolution that annexed Hawaii. I think that's part of the fuzz. A resolution cannot annex anything. So, you know, helping to clarify some of the historical material is, you know, partly done through memorials and through, you know, things that make illumination. So they provide a window onto that. That keeps it sort of in the dialogue, I think. So I'm a fan of hold on to all the history you can, good and bad, but how we interpret that will change.
DeSoto, are you also a fan of that?
I want to point out that I think that there is a tremendous difference between commemoration and glorification. And
hey, mahalo.
And there is, and that is something that is extremely significant in this debate in the United States at the moment. The commemoration of the Civil War and the participants in the Civil War, which is the crux of what's being discussed here, can certainly be accomplished in a way that does not glorify it. And erecting statues with larger-than-life, heroic-looking generals and other men astride horses towering above the people they look down upon is hardly commemoration. It is glorification. And that I am in favor of eliminating. And I have to say, it astonishes me that we are having this debate 150 years later, in which these glorifications have existed for so long and have been accepted.
So let me ask you about other forms of, at least, commemoration. For example, a soldier, a Confederate soldier. Is that something that should come down?
I don't think there should be any human representation of people who were in the Confederacy. I think monuments, which are not people, is perfectly acceptable. And to say this is where this many people died, these are the number of people died, this is in memory of the people who died, that I think is not only appropriate but necessary. And that is where I think that dialogue that Pu'akea was just mentioning, that's where that can get started. Robert E. Lee, as a larger-than-life general, is not a simple commemoration. It is glorification.
That is a great point, and I'm glad you brought it up, because that was part of my fuzz, as I'm thinking, we don't want to lose the link to what happened there. But as you were talking, I'm thinking, the United States Vietnam War Memorial,
yes,
is such an impactful,
it's a powerful
piece
place.
That, yeah. I mean, the first time I saw it, I was just driven to tears just by its presence. But it doesn't glorify.
Mm-hmm.
It acknowledges, it brings you a window into that.
Yeah.
And it helps, like I say, illuminate it.
Right.
But without the glory, you're right.
Exactly. And I would also say, would we erect a statue at Pearl Harbor of a heroic Japanese air pilot? No, we wouldn't, because that isn't what we're there to do. We're not saying it didn't happen. We are not saying that people on both sides were not killed. But we are not saying these are the people we're going to look up to, certainly not in the United States. And I might also add, too, throughout the world, after there are regime changes, what's the first thing that happens? People remove the glorifying statues. There are no statues of Stalin anymore. They were all over Russia and Europe. And those were removed when people finally got a grip and said, this man was terrible.
The idea of not expunging the history but not having something that glorifies a particular personage, that's what I hear you say.
And I agree with that.
All right.
Excellent.
Do you agree with that, too? We want to hear from you. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What is that tipping point for you between commemoration and glorification? We're talking about not only what's happening on the mainland with Confederate monuments and statues that are hearing a great call to pull them down, get rid of them, but what about here in Hawaii, too? What parts of our history here, what parts of the place where you live may, in fact, be pointing toward a direction of history that may or may not be accurate? We can talk about some of that, too. We've heard a lot of calls for original names to be reinstated, as well as buildings to be looked at more critically.
Yep.
Names are a memorial in a lot of ways. And so, erasing names is hard. You lose the content of them and the context of them.
But as you pointed out, it's difficult for a lot of people to know what all these things mean. You know them, I know them, but 99% of the population does not know.
And that speaks to a different issue.
Right.
That speaks to, are we teaching history?
Exactly.
Are we teaching it effectively? And whose history are we teaching?
Correct.
Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Let's take a few callers. Going to Sean calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Sean. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes, I'm calling. I was a history major at UH in 1989. And when I had to do my paper to graduate, I wanted to do on Hawaiian history. I mean, I wanted to do U.S. I had to do U.S. history. But if I had partaked in that, I could not write about anything prior to being a territory, even though a majority of United States citizenry made up a census of Hawaii at the time. But that's not my point. My point concerning what you guys brought up earlier about glorification. If we are a 58th state, red, white, and blue, then what is the Kamehameha statue glorified for in the middle of Honolulu? Your opinion. I'll hang up.
All right. Thanks, Sean. I mean, this goes back again to whose history. How can you, if you can, meld these histories together without having a lot of the emotional angst that some of it may bring up?
Right.
Well, I would say in the case of this specific situation, the statue of Kamehameha in downtown Honolulu far predates the annexation of the Hawaiian Islands. It was placed there in the 1880s by King Kalakaua. So it was, in fact, originally a Hawaiian nationalist monument for the person who pulled together the disparate kingdoms of Hawaii into a coherent large entity, which then was what King Kalakaua essentially had inherited by the time he became king. So he was saying this is going to be, again, a nationalist monument to us as a nation today that is among other nations. Now, as Sean just said, well, if we're the 50th state, then why are we having something like that? And I would say, too, that in this case, it's not that we're being anti-American if that is something that somebody wanted to object to. It's acknowledging a history that existed before the United States was involved.
We've got lots of callers on the line. If you want to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Shy caller Pam from Haiku says, put the statues in a museum, remove them from public spaces. We have another caller from Haiku, Christina. Are you on the line?
Yes, hi, good morning.
Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, thank you so much. I actually wanted to come out a little bit from the Hawaiian certain situations and just comment upon how racism is actually built into our societal models. So if we actually want to go deeper than the statue and go to what the energy that's putting the statue there, we could start with reforming the Electoral College, for instance, which is based on the slave owner's division of the United States electoral process.
But your basic point is that there's a deeper issue here, not just the statues themselves or the period of history in which they represent, but what they mean in a modern context, in particularly the racial divide that we're still experiencing. Would that be
and
right?
Interestingly, that solar eclipse kind of divided north from south, didn't it?
Across the band.
Okay.
Thanks, Christina. Would either of you like to comment? Soto?
Statues have a lot more symbolism than just the fact that there's a human being standing there or something like that. So
they represent a larger set of issues.
Oh, yeah.
And the notion of honoring that is where the problem lies.
Right.
What gets chosen to be honored?
Oh, yeah, and who?
Who's empowered?
And who chooses and who is being depicted?
Again, whose history? What are you trying to point people's attention toward? Because that's, after all, what that does. It galvanizes your attention.
Sure.
And the idea is to make you think, but are you thinking about what it really means?
Exactly.
You don't have any context for it when you just see a monument or a statue of someone.
And what the context of what it means changes over time.
Okay, well, as Christina was telling us, maybe we need to move into a deeper discussion and not keep all the focus on those tangible things, except for the fact that those tangible things are still there, so they're part of that conversation,
they
too.
Sure are.
All right, let's go to John calling us from Lihue. Aloha, John. Welcome to Town Square. And you are originally from from Virginia, from Charlottesville?
I've spent a lot of time in Charlottesville.
Okay.
I'm actually from the Tidewater area, but yes, I'm originally from Virginia.
Do you have a question or comment?
I do, actually. So I'm totally in favor of taking down Confederate statues, not necessarily because I agree with the sentiment, but I think that it's important for us to move on as a country, and if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. However, to speak on General Lee, so it's a very dynamic character in history. He was actually against secession from the Union, but thought that his loyalty should actually lie to Virginia, and so therefore fought on behalf of the Confederacy. Also, his strategies are still, taught in war schools. Specifically, I'm thinking of Virginia Military Institute. So you have a dynamic character, one that was, totally against secession, and one who has, this wonderful strategic mind, and also a person that a lot of people in Virginia can trace their lineage to. So I guess my fear is that if we say, well, all well and good, let's, abolish this remembrance of this person, this very dynamic person. Well, where does that stop? I can think of many Confederate cemeteries.
Oh, okay. Let me stop you right there with the where does it stop, because a lot of people were pretty peeved when they heard the president say that in you know, looking at the founding fathers and all. So where does that stop? How do you keep rolling the evaluation? Or do we really understand that part of this is about rolling that evaluation through time and understanding that it's never really finished?
Well, it is never really finished. That's true. And I also don't think that the removal of statues of Robert E. Lee erases him. And it shouldn't erase him. And I don't think it ever will, because as the caller is saying, there's a great deal to be discussed there. The Civil War in general should not be erased. World War II should not be erased. The Holocaust should not be erased. All of those things need to be discussed and analyzed, and we've got to learn from them. And there is a fine point between wiping out all references versus teaching, keeping people aware, but again, not glorifying and giving people a rallying point of, let's go gather at the statue of Adolf Hitler to become neo-Nazis, which is why there are no such statues or paintings or things in Germany.
But the idea of reevaluation, I think, is really worthwhile.
All right. Well, can we take a few more callers?
Yeah, sure.
And we'll reevaluate as we're talking to them, too. Bill calling us from Hawaii Kai. Aloha, Bill. Welcome to Town Square.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try it.
Okay. I'm hearing two voices there. Hello.
Can you hear me now?
We can.
Okay. Aloha. A question about where does it stop? I'd like to extend that. Many Americans of Japanese ancestry have voiced the opinion, what about Roosevelt, Franklin D.? He signed the internment. Do we therefore close the Roosevelt Monument because what he did was seen as so racist and unfair?
Okay.
Questions like that. Let's
talk about that a little bit, because that's another question. People, again, saying how far do you take this? And understanding that you may have someone who is not purely good or purely evil. Most people live in that continuum, in that gray area there. Someone could do something perfectly terrible and then see the light, understand it, process it, be able to, you know, create some comeuppance for him or herself, and then move into a totally different direction. But what do you do about, for example,
well, that's, and I think that's a very good point. Everybody is good and bad. People are remembered for both good and bad things. However, the statue of the person usually is there to commemorate it, or if the statue is there to commemorate a specific thing.
Right.
Robert E. Lee is there because of the Civil War. Okay,
that's not for all his other qualities.
Not for his other qualities, exactly. Franklin Roosevelt is not going to be commemorated purely for the bad thing of signing the executive order against the Japanese. He's going to be there because of all these other things that he did. And ultimately, he led the United States through a tremendously difficult and fraught period and achieved a great deal of good stuff. So, exactly, you cannot say that every person is unflawed and every statue represents only the perfection of humanity, because there is no such thing.
Which is to say that really we're asking people to reevaluate.
Absolutely.
In the context
Absolutely.
Of understanding what human beings are all about,
right,
and not to create these, you know, these polar knee-jerk reactions that simply say yes, no, or we should be taking this away, or no, it should stay entirely.
It doesn't have
There's
to
something
become,
in the middle.
I'm sorry. It
Go
doesn't
ahead.
Have to become a wildfire, but at the same time, that reevaluation in one place sort of sponsors more dialogue.
Absolutely.
Like that. I remember when they took the name Porteous off the anthropology building.
Yeah.
And it was a reevaluation of that
Absolutely.
Kind of scholarship. Was that something we wanted to honor? And they changed the name of the building.
Right. And there are discussions about street names in Honolulu as well, who are commemoration of men who were instrumental in the overthrow and or the annexation. Do we want to be glorifying them for what was at the time seen as this incredibly positive, bright future thing? Yes, we will shed the heathen past and become Americans, versus what we started to think in the 60s and 70s and onwards of, wait a minute, what? Why? How come you're claiming this man as a hero?
Well, even things that we know have happened in commerce. Liberty House wasn't Liberty House.
Absolutely. Liberty House was a German evil German company during World War I, and it got renamed Liberty House because that was what liberty was the buzzword of World War One. So we're going to shift from being owned by the evil German enemies to becoming as American as apple pie.
All right, we're going to take some more callers. If you want to join us, get on the phone lines now, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you're calling us from the Neighbor Islands or listening to the live stream. That's the number to call. Going to Doc calling us from Hilo. Aloha, Doc. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Hey, hi, Terakalakas. I just have one quick comment. How do we go about changing the history? Because they say, like, Cook discovered Hawaii. Columbus discovered America. How can that be when they didn't discover anything? We knew where we were, and none of that is truly taught in history in school. So how do we tell our Kamali'is and Mo'opunas the true fact?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. This goes back to whose history are we teaching and how do we teach
right
it?
Yeah. History,
well,
yeah.
That's why we don't have there's a de-emphasis of, quote, Columbus Day. There is Discoverer's mm-hmm. Day because, as he just pointed out, there were people already there.
It's hard
and
to
they
discover.
Knew they were.
Yeah.
They're right.
The same with Hawaii, of course.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So,
just because the Europeans got there doesn't mean it was, quote, discovered.
Yeah, you can't change having Cook find Hawaii for Europeans, but you can broaden that out and show the broader history that was
absolutely
in place. Of course, Hawaiians discovered it, and they discovered it probably after there's other adventurers that had made their way, right?
We don't know. See, this is part of the beauty of this. This is an ongoing thing.
Yes.
We constantly learn and discover stuff. And if you just cut it off and say, Cook discovered the Hawaiian Islands, and you stop that, that's absurd.
Well, it erases the Polynesians.
Right. But then the Polynesians of themselves are a very complex story. It isn't just one canoe gets here, pow. We know that there was continuing travel. Mm-hmm. We know that there were waves of people coming and going. We know that there were other outside influences. The entire discussion of did the Spanish come upon Hawaii, all of that we're always going to keep talking about.
So we can't afford to lose any of it, really. You just keep expanding the picture.
You keep learning, and you keep studying.
Yeah.
You do if you're interested and if you feel that that's something you want to do. A lot of people say, I learned this in school. I have a rudimentary knowledge of it. And,
let's
move on. We're going to move on.
You know, the Doc's concern is that, I mean, people are in classes in the state government, the education, both state schools and private schools. They're still teaching from texts that are outdated. How do we sort of keep the conversation that's in place updated into what's being used in the schools?
Which goes to that whole conversation about moving learning beyond a textbook and into real life and with people who really have something to say.
And electronically,
an integrated classroom.
Too. And electronically.
Of course.
And the beauty of electronic communications and information is that it can always be updated and changed. The book is a fixed, tangible thing, and I'm very book-oriented myself. But in tandem with that, we have electronic communications now, which can be altered, changed, brought up to date, whatever, just like that.
Well, books are one thing. You're right. Textbooks, quite another. I mean, very often they would even tell college students, some of the things you'll be learning in here are several years out of date, and it's a brand new textbook.
Absolutely.
And I can remember being told that, too, and it's still the case.
Yes.
941-3689 or 877-941-3689 is our number to make the case for how we remember history. What do we do to commemorate it without perhaps glorifying it when the glorification would be a very negative act, as many have found the Confederate monuments to be, and why the calls for their removal. Going now to Pat calling us from Lanai. Aloha, Pat.
Aloha. Well,
good to talk
simple
to you.
Simple and hard question. Who gets to decide all this?
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes.
I'd like to have a discussion on that, so I'll take it off the air.
Okay, thanks, Pat. That goes to the same heart is whose history, who gets to decide. I mean, we always have heard that the victors get to write the history books,
and
however they would like to see society continue, or they have to bring society from wherever they've been there and supplant it as being a superior way of behaving, and de-emphasizing, even belittling, or trying to expunge entirely the people that they have colonized.
Absolutely. That's how it works.
Well, but there's also a porosity there. I mean, those in power over the writing and the presentation aren't in complete power. So there's always alternative sources. Don't let that dialogue die just because there's a louder voice elsewhere.
Yes.
And so, it's easier now, too, for exactly the reasons you talked about a moment ago, DeSoto.
Yeah. And there are a lot more ways that people can get their voices heard. And I think also, too, if you look back over, say, the last 100 years and see how the makeup of the Hawaiian Islands has changed, the power has shifted. It is absolutely astonishing. If you think 1917 versus 2017, who's talking, who's in control, it is 100% different than it was.
Right.
And whether that's good or not, it just is an evolution. And it's always going to be different. So we're always going to be hearing different voices. We're always going to be hearing different ideas and different changes and different pushes. And some people are going to be saying this, some others that. Again, 2017, looking back, the government of the territory of Hawaii was run by Haole people and Hawaiian people, and some and lesser numbers of Hawaiians. The Asian population, which was the largest percentage of the population, had virtually no voice. And
they were labor force.
They were the labor force, and we have seen that evolution go completely towards the descendants of the agricultural laborers. They're the people who are running the government now. And that doesn't mean it's good, bad. It is the way it has happened. And they, you know, the different voices are heard or not heard according to changes in society.
Well, we've got some voices who would like to be heard right now. We've got a full panel on our phone lines, but that shouldn't deter you. If you want to get into this conversation, you've got some time to do that. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. 8-9 going to Steve, calling us from St. Louis Heights. Aloha,
oh,
Steve.
Hi.
Hi there.
Very quickly, this is on who to determine history. And I will make a comment and let the panel fill in. In the Civil War, at the time the Civil War broke out, it was declared by many states and by Alexander Stevens, who was the vice president of the Confederacy, slavery was the reason they left the Union. Very specifically, stated slavery, nothing else, slavery. And that's heavily documented. Once the South lost, they started revising their own history, saying it had slavery was just a minor point. It was really
Steve, Steve, forgive me for interrupting you, but we're having a really difficult time hearing you. So if you can capsulize this for me in just a sentence or two, then we need to move on because we're really having a very bad connection with you.
Southern state textbooks still teach children that the cause of the Civil War was states' rights.
Yeah.
And that is simply a lie.
Yeah.
The cause of the Civil War was, as declared by the Southern states, slavery. I'll take it offline.
All right. Thanks very much, Steve. We appreciate that. Well, this goes back again to these same discussions of how do you change that?
A perpetuated lie.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lie repeated over and over gains a great deal of force.
It surely does.
And so, locally, the annexation of Hawaii, which is
absolutely
not historically true. There is no annexation.
Yes.
And yet it's still referred to in our conversation today. It's part of the discourse.
Absolutely.
One of the issues about the McKinley statue is the only existing copy of the Treaty of Annexation is in his brass arms.
Yeah.
That's what's in that statue. I would hate to lose that because it's
exactly
such a great example of that perpetuated
correction.
Untruth.
Correct.
Okay, we've got George calling us from Kona who's asking a similar question. George, you there? Okay, we're going to move on to Michael calling us from Kalihi. Aloha, Michael. Welcome to Town Square.
To the issue of fabricating history, the Kamehameha statue that's downtown that we spoke of today, as well as his symbols around the different visitor sites, he was a mass murderer, was he not? Didn't he kill thousands, at least hundreds of people, perhaps thousands, throwing them off the Pali Cliff, etc.? Why is that history not better represented? Is that a sort of a cover-up also here in the state of Hawaii? What's your views on that?
All right, Poke, up you go.
Kamehameha used war, which is the mode of the time,
and then still
to
is
create
in any way.
Peace.
Yeah.
But following his conquest of the islands, he is the nation builder. He stopped war through war.
Yeah.
War happened a lot. Not only under Kamehameha. It was the norm of the time.
Yes.
And he actually used that to end war, and there was never another, well, except for a little uprising on Kauai, never another war. He created a peaceful nation.
And the other, I could also add, too, this is not the first time this has come up. And those of us who are old enough remember Sammy Amalu, who was a commentator, a newspaper commentator, who was Hawaiian. And that's exactly what he said. Kamehameha was a bloodthirsty tyrant who killed all these many people, and yet why are we glorifying him? And again, it's not everybody's good, everybody's bad. It is not the method that was used to get there that's being commemorated. It is the fact that, as you just said, he built a nation which then enabled the Hawaiian Islands to become truly a nation among other nations. That was the purpose of that statue.
And in the context of his time,
that was the norm.
He's a gentle man compared to Kalani Opu'u Ke Kaulike, some of the other kings of his time who did warfare for fun.
Well, and also, too, this was a society in which human sacrifice was absolutely foundational to a lot of the activities
that
went on.
So it was culturally appropriate.
It was what culturally occurred at the time. You killed somebody to cut down a tree to make a canoe, and you killed someone. I mean, that's what went on.
All right. We have several callers who are asking the question, well, how do you change all that? We'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to take this call from Justin calling us from Wisconsin. Aloha, Justin. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Bethan. I'm just calling for a couple of reasons. One, I don't like the word haole. It's kind of disrespectful. Sounds like a racial epithet, so I appreciate it if your guest didn't use it in the future. Also, along those lines about disrespect, people don't really have respect for dialogue. They believe what they believe, and if the other person doesn't believe it, they call them racist or haters, and they just don't open up. It's pretty Orwellian. It sounds like 1984 to me.
All right, well...
Yeah.
This is a conversation that I've been having with Neil Milner for a very long time. And people will say, well, you have to open yourself up to other perspectives and points of view. Some of the social science, it says, in fact, we're hardwired not to do that. We're hardwired to find agreement. You have to push against that. How do you push against that? Do you want to? If you're in a place where you are, you know, able to find, at the click of a button, people to agree with you, what do you have to do to overcome that? Would you do that? These are all questions that go back to the heart of this conversation, too.
May I address the use of the word haole?
Please do.
Okay. Puakea can speak for himself. However, the word haole today has been, among certain people, turned into what's considered a racial insult. It is not. It was never created for that reason. Mm-hmm. And it is not an insult. I consider myself to be Hapa haole. I am haole and Hawaiian, and it is unfortunate that the word has come to have that baggage for people, and I understand why they feel that way, but I don't agree with it, and I will use it in conversation as a descriptor of essentially...
Someone who's foreign-born.
A person who's foreign-born, and in conversation we use it to mean somebody who is of mostly European ancestry.
Which even that is sort of a modern change over time. I'm a haole maoli. I'm a full haole. And the term has been, you can take almost any term and make it a negative. You know, you're so woman. You know, it's the way that it's used.
Yes.
And it's being used as a real negative. But it really does simply define one group from another. It doesn't have to have negative connotations.
Yeah, and as you just said, it doesn't. We use it to mean white now, but
it didn't mean that.
It meant you weren't Hawaiian and you were from somewhere else.
You could
right.
be black and you would still be a haole.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right, we're going to go now to Linda calling us from Hilo. Aloha, Linda. Welcome to Town Square.
Oops. Yep. Aloha. I'm wondering about the bronze statue of McKinley in Honolulu and if there is a way to correct the words there on that scroll that say Treaty of Annexation. Is there a way to correct it? So, yeah, that's just my question.
All right. Okay. You brought up that statue.
I brought it up and immediately I was going, no, don't correct anything. If they want to put it in a museum, if, you know, whoever is offended by its presence. Yeah. But I think that statue is such a remarkable sort of embodiment of an historical sweep and an historical move that I'd love to see an illuminating plaque, some educational plaque that explains that that Treaty of Annexation is the only extant copy of anything.
Right.
Because there's nothing in paper. So the fact that that statue and that treaty in his arms represents a mindset and an intention to create a new, perpetuate a new untruth.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would also say, too, that in reference to, we've been talking about textbooks and so forth, throughout a great deal of the 20th century, there was sort of a catchphrase that was used in not only in local textbooks for history, but in all kinds of publicity that was generated during that time, which was, quote, the people of Hawaii requested annexation, and was the justification. Uh-huh. Well, in fact, a group of people in the Hawaiian Islands requested it, but it wasn't the population.
It was all 14 of them.
Exactly. It was a small segment of the society. However, that phrase, requested annexation, mm-hmm. became the, oh, isn't that wonderful, and what foresight they had to become part of the United States. That, which was essentially PR, which was created as a publicity statement, became absolutely commonplace and ubiquitous. That's what all the textbooks said. That's what all the travelogues said.
All right, let's go back and take some more callers. Going to Scott, calling us from Makakilo. Aloha, Scott. Welcome to Town Square.
Hello. Yeah, I'd like to just briefly discuss, you know, as we decide whether or not to take down statues, I think we need to consider why they were erected in the first place. So in the example of the Confederate statues, a lot of them were erected at the end of the Jim Crow era and also during the Civil Rights Movement. So it's, I think, you know, we're not asking them to be removed because of it. They're a painful reminder. It's because they're a reminder of an exertion of oppressive power during those times.
Yes.
Which is pretty painful to a lot of people.
They were meant to be threatening.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
To intimidate. Yeah.
That is a very important point of this. If they are symbols of this is oppressive, we are oppressing you. We are showing you our strength, and we're showing you we're superhuman and larger in life, mm-hmm. and we can do that, then I'm not a fan of that.
And the monuments and memorials, they're part of the larger discourse. They sort of embody a mindset. So they have to be very carefully intended.
Yes, yes.
So there was a lot of energy that went into those statues.
Yes, exactly.
There's a new statue coming up in Honolulu, you know, that Thomas Square will is planning a statue for Kawikeoli.
Yes.
Now, the big discussion there was, do you make a statue of Lord Thomas, Admiral Thomas, or do you make it of Kawikeoli?
Yeah.
That discussion was as widespread as they could get it. They tried to engage as many voices as could and honored Kawikeoli because he's not been honored elsewhere.
Right.
And that move, that outcome was pivotal. To how his nation proceeded.
Yes, exactly. Right. So, and back to what I said earlier, there are ways of commemorating without depicting human beings because there's so much baggage attached to how a human being is shown. Are they tall and erect and overlooking things? Are they sort of mm-hmm. beaten down? Are they in grief? All of those ways are used to depict human beings for statues, and that makes a really big difference. A plain geometrical object that's made of stone that has words on it that says we are commemorating this mm-hmm. is going to have a lot less of this baggage than is the larger-than-life hero gazing into the distance.
Right, and eliciting a very different response when you see that than when you see something up there that is dwarfing you mm-hmm. and potentially intimidating as well.
The Washington Monument compared to the statue of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Let's go off to Michelle, calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Michelle. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Wow, so many thoughts flowing through my brain right now. I remember my Hawaiian auntie when I was fairly new to living in Hawaii. I've lived here since 1969. And she talked about being beaten in school for just speaking Hawaiian.
Mm-hmm.
And as a haole from the mainland, responding to the gentleman from Wisconsin, if you don't live here, you don't have a say. I'm sorry, but that's exactly how I feel. I lived in the North growing up, moved to the South, was called carpetbagger to my face and Yankee, which were epithets. And words are powerful. And as far as monuments go, if they are being used as a way to beat people, used as a way of oppression, like what happened in Charlottesville with these horrible people carrying Nazi flags and yelling, "Jews will not
replace
us," and I'm also a Jew by choice, so I throw my lot with those people. I may not be Jewish enough for some Orthodox Jews, but I'm sure I'm Jewish enough for places like Dachau. So that's just my opinion. And oh, by the way, when Patsy Mink died, my husband was like, well, and he was old school, and he kind of goes, well, why does she get a monument? Or why does she get a flag raised at half-mast for her? And when I told him, why do we only give monuments to warriors, men, and people of war, why not to somebody like Patsy Mink, who did so much for the women of Hawaii?
And throughout the USA.
Yeah, actually.
Thank you very much for all of your thoughtful comments. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, and first person, too.
And who do we honor and why? And what are you willing to do and why?
Yes. Yeah, well, again, and it's also worth pointing out that the reexamination goes on. The person who is honored today can become the person who is scorned tomorrow for all kinds of reasons. It is, how do we determine those things? It's always ever-changing. It's always ever-evolving. And you can look back and say, I am offended that this statue was put up, or look back and say, why didn't they put up a statue for this person when we look back and say, look at all he or she did.
Some of that goes to the cultural context. Some of that goes to the political context.
Yeah.
And also to political will. Who is really willing to stand up and say, no, this is wrong and here's why, or why aren't you considering this? The Thomas Square example is a perfect 100% one.
100% agreement. Yes, it's who's got the political will to walk it through, how much sort of energy is able to be focused there, and what's the reaction? They should always be reviewed carefully. It should be a community dialogue.
And things like this are so dependent upon the individual. There could be a cluster of three people who will get it to happen. And one person may pull out and the whole thing may collapse. So there is never any way to sort of absolutely assure that everything is going to go the way you want it in the real world. And that's just what you got to deal with.
All right. Right now we're going to see what John, calling us from Lower Puna, is dealing with. Thanks very much for your call. You're on Town Square.
Well, it's an interesting show there, but, you know, sometimes the statues that are left in the town squares are a venue for theater for people in the future to lay their little, you know, I mean, you know, you can make theater out of those old statues, most of them are made of metal, and I think you can melt metal down.
You sure can.
All right, John, we get your point. Thanks so much for the call. Well, that goes, again, to the context of where are you in history? How do you reevaluate everything? Every time that you move forward, does that reframe everything else behind it?
It does.
And in so doing, does that mean that you need to take a better look at your surroundings and what is up there for people to see, what's being glorified, what's being commemorated?
Know what else, too? There's always tipping points occur. And there can be discontent, there can be individuals who are angry, there can be groups who are angry and disagree, but it can go on for decades with nothing happening, and then there can be one galvanizing event where everybody suddenly says, wait a minute, we have to stop. We are at that particular tipping point moment with the Confederate statues and the Confederate glorification right at this moment, which, as I said earlier, it astonishes me that this went on for as long as it did with absolute outright adulation of people who, if you are saying this is the United States, were traitors to the United States as it is now configured.
If you want to jump into this conversation, you got a couple minutes left to do it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We had several people who called in who were all asking the same thing, so we'll just sort of capitalize it and say, what do you do about it when you see this? When you begin to get that niggling feeling in your stomach and things aren't right with the way you're viewing one of those statues, how do you begin to honor the history of it, accept the history of it, understand the history of it, and still say perhaps that shouldn't be there?
Okay, well, I think there's definitely the wildfire is on the continent, and that's going to keep a dialogue really fresh and going. In Hawaii, I think there's it's not that it's unique in the world, but it's certainly there's a history that was overwritten.
Mm-hmm.
And the considerations here, I think, are to invest more in bringing out history, making the actual history of known history from pre-contact with Cook, post-contact, kingdom era, what went on through the territory, continue to illuminate that.
Yes.
Continue
yes.
to bring it out.
Yes.
There are heroes. I mean, I'm familiar. I work within the Hawaiian language side of that that recorded a kingdom has seldom been looked at.
Yes.
So I'm more familiar in that block, and I see heroes that people don't even know the names of.
Yes.
And it's a process that's opening up, and I think that it's a really positive one. It's in motion, but it's really still fledgling.
Yes.
So, but the idea of there has been an intentional overwrite of his. McKinley is an embodiment of that.
Yes.
An overwrite, an erasure
yes.
of history. So I think real effort has to be made to sort of open that, build new resources to make that accessible.
And how much do you both see now in trying to return, for example, Hawaiian place names and have that be commonplace and used
and
in the way that we haven't seen before?
Let me just point out that Puakea Noglewire, sitting right there, whose voice you are listening to, is the voice of the bus system.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to say that.
And no, but I'm saying that because Puakea's pronunciation of Hawaiian words has now made a significant inroad in the pronunciation that people use in conversation. It's just say it enough, and they'll start to realize it's not kinau, it's kinau.
And thank you, DeSoto, because actually it's not a statue, but a public model is what created that, a stable public model for language pronunciation. It's not perfect pronunciation, it's mine, but it was carefully done. And to have a single way that Waianae is heard every day, because you can hear it five ways on the radio. You know, you might say it carefully, and then Crater Radio says, you know, Waianae, and so, you know, that you may hear it five ways in a day. To have a single, consistent model, that's part of what statues are doing. That's what place names are doing. So to give a set of references helps to commemorate and bring that into sort of awareness today. So I think that that's real worthwhile, to create models and
right.
venues for learning.
Right.
I'd love to see a really explanatory plaque on McKinley's statue.
Yes.
That really shows how very much our history can be like the Matrix. You know, you have to get through the cracks to get to what's really there.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, we have many more venues now for spreading that word. We have lots more rediscovery of materials. We have the electronic digitization of original, fragile, or unique materials that now our people are able to get their hands on, their eyes on, and to learn from. And others of us can use those raw materials from the past to illuminate and discuss and teach people today to say, look, have you ever seen this before? Look at this. Did you know that this happened?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and to that point, we're going to go to Nikki calling us from Kaneohe. Nikki, are you there?
Hi, I'm here. This is Nikki. And I just wanted to say that in discussing what should be up, I recently was telling my son, and I'm 77 this year, born in on Oahu in 1940, that I was telling him I knew that workers had been shot down in our own streets in the 30s, and I didn't know anything more. I know my father told me about the Massey case, but so we looked it up, and I found that at what was called the Hilo Massacre, and I'm failing the date in the 30s, of the
1937.
Union workers who gathered at the wharf in Hilo,
mm-hmm.
Because they were protesting non-union labor on a ship that was arriving, I think it was called the Kawaihai, but I'm not sure. They were shot, and it's not clear to me if there were any deaths, but
they were
shot. They actually, I read, were the first nonviolent sit-in. They had been studying Gandhi, and they used the Gandhian principles, you know, as they approached the those who were armed. And I just thought that was amazing and moving. I was a civil rights worker in 1965 in Louisiana, and as a Hawaii-born girl. So I was very moved to hear about the Hilo Massacre. The Hanapepe Massacre
yes.
was the other one I learned.
I was going
to
also
anyway,
bring
I
that up,
ask,
yeah.
I don't know if there is a plaque. Has anybody else been aware of that history?
Well, the history, fortunately, has been told. There is, in fact, an entire book about the Hilo Massacre, which is where I learned about it. But this is exactly the point that we're making. There are so many of these amazing stories which are out there, which, again, are downplayed or are forgotten or that people don't know about.
Not taught.
Or not taught. And either because they don't seem relevant at the time, they seem incidental, and with the passage of time, they gain a great deal of significance and importance. That is what we still can be doing today. There are people who can be disseminating these stories for us to continue to learn from. And they are not all good stories. There are sad stories. There are tragic stories. But there are uplifting and happy ones as well that they're out there for us to tell.
We've had a lot of people call in and ask about wanting to discuss the word Hawley and what the context of it was. I know you've already said that, so I'll just sort of point you back to earlier in the program, and you'll be able to listen to the broadcast tonight at 7 o'clock if you like, or to be able to find it on the archive. But lots of people are glomming onto that one. Also asking questions about, what about equal rights? How do we begin to talk about that in the context of these monuments? Can that further the discussion and really change the conversation away from just the statues to all of those underlying issues that we've been talking about throughout this program? How do you refocus people on those issues?
That is the tough part. And as I said earlier, the problem with a statue that is very heroic is it can become a rallying point for people who want to use it for evil purposes. And when neo-Nazis are gathering at a statue of a heroic-looking general, that's the absolute ultimate of worst-case scenarios you can have happen. So that is why the depiction of the statue can be used in a negative way.
We're coming up to the top of the hour, and I just want to get some final thoughts from you, about 30 seconds each. Where do we go from here in Hawaii with this discussion? Okay.
Well, I think continue to learn history. To really learn the pieces of it and accept that some of the history we were taught is untrue, is unclear, is a remiss.
And that may be a big hurdle, to accept that what you've been taught has not been.
That's the first hurdle. And then step beyond that and start learning. Start learning beyond that. So just knowing that what we've been handed is not completely true is really important. And it affects all kinds of aspects of history, not just American impact on these islands.
Yeah, and so? history can be, what you learn can be sometimes intentionally mistaught, and sometimes it is through omission, by neglect, by mistake. That is why if this is something that interests you, you can continue to learn. You can pursue all these things. Look around. We have the electronic world now that offers us information that we could never have dreamed of in the past. Continue to use that, look around, and learn, and teach yourself, and talk to other people. Talk, and as others have said, talk to those who are older. Ask people, what was it like? What did you experience? Learn from your family members. Learn from older people that you know. Get that information from them. They lived it, and they can give you insight as well.
I hear both of you saying, accept that the history you've been taught is not a correct version.
Flawed.
Find something, even if just one thing, and go try to find more about it. Ask somebody else and make an effort.
Sure.
Really just make an effort. DeSoto Brown, Puakea Noglemeyer, thank you so much for being here. Always a pleasure to talk to both of you. Now, as with much in life, the lives of radio programs have a beginning, a middle, and an end. After 18 years, today marks the last broadcast of Town Square. My heartfelt thanks for all the conversations we've had over so many years about the issues that shape our lives and will continue to shape them. Your support has been utterly invaluable. It's always been good to talk to you. Now, I hope that you will keep talking and exploring perspectives. We talked a lot about that today. Especially now, we need insights based on facts, candor tempered with compassion, and a willingness to dial back purely emotional reactions so we can really listen to each other. To my staff and to all of you, my very fond aloha. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich, and this has been Town Square.